This week, we've got a great interview for you guys. Really excited about this one. This is Kevin Forbes from Clay Entertainment. Now, you may not recognize that name, but I guarantee that you've played a game by Clay Entertainment. These guys made Mark of the Ninja. They made Don't Starve, Invisible Ink, Oxygen Not Included, and then most recently, Grifflands, which if you listen to the podcast, you know I was a huge fan of that, totally on the hype train for Grifflands. So I was really excited to talk to Kevin. Hope you guys enjoy it. Check it out. All right, so Kevin, right?
Yes, Kevin.
All right, nice to meet you. I'm Bobby. Thanks for doing this, man. This is really awesome. I'm excited to talk to you.
Oh, no problem. I love talking to people about what we do.
And you've been with Clay Entertainment for a long time, right? How long has it been?
Since 2008. So quite a while.
2008? Oh, that goes way back. I think the first Clay Entertainment game I played was Mark of the Ninja, and that was 2013. But you guys have made games before that, right? You had Shank and what else?
Let's see. There was one before I joined the company, Eats. I wasn't involved with that one. Two Shanks, a couple kind of canceled projects, Mark of the Ninja, Don't Starve, Invisible Ink, Hot Lava. I'm probably leaving some stuff out.
Yeah, a lot of good games though. Is that normal to be with a company that long as a game developer?
It's normal for Clay. I mean, like my entire career is only a couple years longer than my tenure here, so. I think my view of the industry is a little bit warped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you must be pretty happy there. I mean, you've been there for so long. You must like it.
Yeah, I really do. Like I started in AAA development doing like sports games, right? Not really my wheelhouse. But I find that at a smaller company, although we have grown quite a bit since I joined, you get a lot more creative freedom, and the games that you work on from game to game change a lot, which is very interesting as a designer and a programmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys have a big variety of games, but I don't know how to really classify you. Are you guys indie? Or are you like, you're not AAA? Because you seem a little bit bigger than
we're indie. Not AAA. Well, I mean, each individual team within Clay is pretty small. Like, we tend to have a lot of things going on at one time, either publicly or privately. So, like, for example, the Grifflands team, I think I counted, it varies kind of day to day as people, like, move around internally. But I think we're at about 15 right now.
Okay. Well, that's smaller than I expected for the number of games that you guys put out. I don't know. I don't know anything about developing, but... Yeah, that doesn't seem like much.
It's on the smaller side. Like a AAA game will have hundreds of people nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do, I was reading up a little bit on you, and it looks like you do quite a bit, or you have done just about everything, writing, designing, programming, a whole bunch of stuff.
Not art. that's the thing I haven't done. But we wear a lot of hats here.
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular part of that you enjoy the most? Like, do you enjoy the writing or the designing more?
Probably. I mean, I started as a programmer, like when I went to school and whatnot. In my first job, I was pretty strictly a gameplay programmer because you get siloed pretty harshly in AAA. You only do your job, right?
Mm-hmm.
I find probably design the most rewarding, like design / direction stuff. Although it's very unconcrete. So what remains of my programmer brain kind of revolts at it, because there's no right answer to anything. It's all about opinions and weighing the evidence and mm-hmm. making the best judgment call. Versus, you know, occasionally I'll have to retreat back into programming land and just optimize something so I can clear my head a little bit. Writing, I find, is nice, but I don't know if I could do that every day, all day. I find it quite stressful.
So you did the writing on some of the Clay's games, right? Which ones were those?
The original writing on Don't Starve, such as it was, like it's mostly item description and characters, mm-hmm. mostly commenting upon it. What they see in the world. That was mostly me, although that rapidly became a team effort as the number of lines grew and grew and grew. And then I did the writing pass I came in at the end of Invisible Ink and tried to put a story on it. it was a very mechanics-focused game, and it needed a lot of hard questions asked about, like, why are bullets so expensive in this world versus, like, you know, nano augmentations or whatever are less expensive than two bullets. It's like, okay, well, I can work with that. I'll figure something out.
Yeah. You know, I haven't played Invisible Ink, but Don't Starve, I remember playing quite a bit of that. And I feel like that was really one of the biggest hits you guys had. I mean, Mark the Ninja really put you on my map. And I know that was kind of a big indie hit, but Don't Starve, I remember, you know, just to give you an idea of how big I think this game was, I was watching a movie about 2 years ago. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Don't Starve has a cameo in a movie called The Predator in 2018.
We passed around screenshots of that. I think that was shot. A lot of films get actually shot in Vancouver, where we are at.
It's
a local production.
So it wasn't like your marketing team trying to get it in there. It was. It's probably a fan of, or somebody on set was must have been a fan or something.
Yeah, or somebody knew someone, and yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, I pause it. I'm like, is that? Oh, that is Don't Starve. Yeah. But it was a huge game. I mean, everybody knows that game. Everybody's played it. And then later you guys came out with a multiplayer version of it, which for me, that's when I really got into it. The single player was fun, but it felt a little lonely. And then multiplayer came and I'm like, yep, this is exactly what I wanted. What was the change like that going from single player to multiplayer?
Well, it actually happened after I was off the project. I was off possibly doing the Invisible Ink stuff or some other project that didn't see the light of day. It's funny because when it was originally myself, like, I'm a little old school and I don't really like multiplayer all that much. I find it inherently stressful to be responsible for other people's fun and enjoyment. So, like, you know, the doorbell rings or I got to go answer the phone or something, and I lose or cause other people to lose, I feel really bad. So
yeah.
I tend to prefer games that are toy boxes that I can kind of just poke at my own speed. So when I was in Don't Starve, it was very much a single player thing. It was designed from single player for both constraints on our time as developers, because multiplayer is really hard compared to single player, and also just my own personal taste, because I was the one that got to kind of make that call at the time. But it was the one thing that everybody asked for. Everyone wanted multiplayer. It's like, you know, we really want to put this world together. I was like, well, you know, artistically, the whole point of the game is a feeling of loneliness. That was what I was going for. I mean, you know, we're in trouble next saying that. But once I left and was on other things, other people came in and made it multiplayer. Yeah. So, and I think it took quite an effort to retrofit the game, which is partly why it got put into two parts, because certain things, the way the balance worked, the way the controls worked, the way objects in the world actually interacted with each other, assumed one player in the world, and you couldn't really reconcile that with multiplayer. So the decision was made to split it into two teams so that the single player could continue doing what it does best, and the multiplayer could make changes as it sees fit without impacting everyone who's already enjoying the single player game.
Yeah, because I remember the second one was released as its own game, and I think it was heavily discounted if you owned the single player version, so it didn't really feel like you had to repurchase it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but it's still a great game. You know, when we locked in this interview, I talked to a few friends and we all got back into it and had a great time playing that. And it's been a while since I picked that one up, but it still absolutely holds up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, time flies. I can't believe that was 7 years ago now when we 1.0 release of Don't Starve.
Yeah. So you guys have done all sorts of different games, but I've noticed something that's consistent with a lot of them is the art style. Maybe in Invisible Ink, it kind of strays a little bit. For the most part, you guys have that 2D kind of hand-drawn animation thing. Do you always use the same artist, or is that just a style you guys like?
Well, we have a lot of our artists actually come from the local animation industry here in Vancouver. There's a lot of animation houses, and our creative director comes from there. And like his contacts are all in that world. So the people that we tend to be from traditional 2D television animation. So they kind of just bring with them a certain aesthetic and design sense that carries through in the games. And I think like it's not something that a lot of other studios try to do. So we kind of have the space to ourselves, which is nice. And it really does, you know, if you go back and you look at like a PS1 3D game, how it doesn't really hold up to modern standards. I think that 2D art, once you get over the fact that it's 2D, it ages a lot better than a lot of 3D stuff does.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've noticed that as well. You can go back to those games and they don't feel like they've aged much, whereas those 3D graphics do, definitely.
Yeah, those games where people don't really have hands, they just have these like shovels at the end of their arms.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you guys decided on that art style for the game, and that's just kind of what you stuck with all throughout? Do you ever think about changing it or trying something different, or are you pretty happy with that?
Well, like every new game is a new discussion, and there's trade-offs to be had, right? So like Don't Starve was, it was kind of meant to be like a Tim Burton-y kind of Hot Topic kind of goth thing. But also it's a very expressive and minimalist style when you come down to it. So like you can actually draw in it relatively quickly. Like it's not a super finicky and high def way to draw these characters. Compare that to something like Grifflands, where it's actually the influences there are more from like French and Belgian science fiction comics from the 1970s, like Mobius, right? And there's quite a lot more detail there. So you know, individual things take a lot longer, but that game doesn't. Don't Starve kind of lives or dies on its volume of content and all the different monsters and different items. So you need to be able to kind of make those things very, very quickly and cheaply, right? Whereas Grifflands is more about the cards multiply faster than the characters, so we can spend a little more time on each individual character.
Okay. I got a random question. What time period does Don't Starve take place in? Because it seems, I know it's kind of a fantasy world, but it seems like turn of the century to me with all the machinery and stuff. Am I correct in thinking so?
Yeah, there's a, the fans will be mad at me, but there's actually a very specific timeline that I used to know off the top of my head. I know that we did a bunch of ARGs leading up to some of the releases there. We were exploring the backstory of the characters that were already in the world before you got there. Mm-hmm. And a major plot point in Maxwell, the antagonist's background, is the San Francisco earthquake in 1908, I think.
Yeah.
I think that Wilson's in the 20s. A thousand wiki editors just screamed out in horror, but something like that.
Yeah, you know, I tried looking it up and it didn't seem like there was a finite answer. It was more of a discussion, but I thought I'd just ask the source. But that brings up another interesting point. So with Don't Starve, like you just kind of throw people in there, and I wasn't very much aware of too much story or even any sort of like tutorialized training, anything like that. The philosophy of the game and what I've noticed with some of your other games is just kind of very focused on the mechanics, just kind of throw the player in, and part of the fun is figuring things out. Is that something that you personally like in games?
It is, yeah. Like if you remember the battle days of tutorials where it was, you know, press crouch to crouch and jump to jump.
Yeah, they still do that.
Yeah, I guess a lot of games, things are getting a little better. They're pretty bad in like the Xbox 360 era. But they're just kind of two things. Like one, like, it's really boring to play through as a player. Like, and you do need to learn that stuff. And if you don't know it, like you need to make a game accessible enough that someone who's never played a video game before has a chance at learning how to play. Otherwise, you're excluding people for no reason. And you make games, you want people to play them. So you have to make the game discoverable. But I don't think the best way to teach people how to play a game is to lead them by the nose through a series of steps that they'll kind of do what you say on the screen and then forget it immediately thereafter. I think like you'll learn better as a player if you have discovered each little piece of knowledge on your own. And it's a tricky thing to try to make that, to balance that off with user frustration, because obviously if you get into a game, you know, like Invisible Ink, which has tons and tons of buttons and systems and very complex interactions, you can bounce off if you don't learn enough on your own fast enough. And each game is kind of this delicate dance of like putting it in front of people and watching them, doing user testing, getting lots of feedback and early access, and trying to figure out where all the pain points are as someone's trying to learn the game, and sanding them down. But in a way that's not super explicit and boring.
Yeah. Now, I'm right there with you, and I don't know if it's me just as being an experienced gamer who has already been through all that stuff, but I find it very frustrating when I'm kind of handheld through that tutorial process. But also on game design, I wanted to ask, you guys work on so many different genres. Is it just like all games are the same, it doesn't really matter? Or is there any unique challenges that come up when you're jumping genres?
They're all quite different inside. I mean, like the problems that you solve are different. Don't Starve was all about balancing economy and having emergent behaviors in all of the little pieces and parts of the game that work together. Grifflands is more about balance and card balance and trying to, you know, forefront imply a deeper narrative than we're actually presenting on the screen by showing snippets of content and remixing it and all this kind of stuff. Action games are all about controller feel. Like, we spent a lot of time on Shank, like just making the buttons feel nice to push and, mm-hmm. you know, having all the like frame timings and that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's all ones and zeros at some point, but like what you're thinking about at the high level is actually quite different per game. Mm.
Yeah, and I'm impressed at how well you're able to pull these off. I mean, I recently started playing Grifflands, and I was just really like immediately hooked on that game, which does not happen very often. Minutes into that game, I was just in its clutches. I don't think that's happened to me since like the first XCOM, and I felt like compelled to play it through to the very end or what's available so far. And so I was really a big fan of that. And that's in a very early stage right now too. There's a lot of playable content, but you guys are going to have a lot more, right?
We're currently planning on 3 characters. We actually have an update coming up tomorrow, which adds another day to Rook's story. So that's 50% more content for Rook, I think. it took a long time in that game's development to kind of find out what the game was. But at this point, I think we've solved most of the hard design problems, and then it's more about like making compelling content and like fun pools and days to go through and interesting cards and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I had read an article about how when you guys originally announced this game, it was a completely different game, and then it was later changed to that card-based combat. Was that a tough decision for you guys to come to, or was it just like, this is what the game's evolving into, this is the right way to go?
It took a while. I'm not going to say it was easy, but I think it's like our development process is very iterative, right? Like we'll start building something and probably not going to build the thing that we started building in almost all of our games. Mm-hmm. There's been some major change or revelation as we were playing and building it. We're like, oh, actually, that doesn't work. But this does. We found this interesting thing. In terms of the actual card combat, we actually, the first cards in the game were for negotiation. So in Grifflands, there's combat kind of as you like Slay the Spire style or like any RPG. But then we also wanted to gamify the way that you talk to people. Because I think it's pretty boring how a lot of games treat their NPCs. Like it's all about you encounter this person, they're against you, you fight, they will fight to the death no matter what. like with the singular motivation other than to kill you and create progress. So we're trying to model like a more interesting world where people, you know, have self-preservation instincts and things that they want in the world other than just whatever it is right in front of you in the quest. And we initially modeled all this with kind of traditional dice rolls. So like, you know, 50% chance to convince this person to do something. And that works okay, but it always feels bad when you lose those because it's the dice. And even if like, you know, like you have a character who's like 50% good at persuading someone and then you upgrade them and they're 65% good at persuading someone, you're still going to lose like, you know, some percentage of the time. That'll feel just as bad. So we were trying to find a way to make that feel interactive. And, you know, at the same time, Aspire had come out and shown how to adopt Dominion, which is a very popular card game. Those types of mechanics into kind of a battler format. And the negotiation game kind of just worked when we did it, and we got quite into that, and it was fun because there was such a big room for player performance. Like, you can play your cards right, you can play them poorly, it feels like it's your fault when you lose. You add a deck building component to that, and then that kind of replaces all the numbers go up stat bonuses that you get in a typical RPG, and it's just more interesting, I think, than a skill tree. And that works well for negotiation, that we eventually replaced our combat system with it as well, and kind of signed up to make two card battlers at once.
Oh, so the battle side wasn't supposed to be card-based, but the negotiations were.
I mean, at the time, the battle was, it was playable at PAX a couple of years ago. It was more traditional JRPG style, where you collect attacks and time it.
Yeah, I see. And that's kind of what it looks like on screen when you have the characters doing battles, each on their own side.
People's turns would come up, they would pick one of their actions, they would do it, they would go back in the queue, and then the next person would go, but the problem was that it just wasn't that interesting. You would always play your best move, and then you would eventually win or lose, and it didn't feel, it wasn't hitting the right notes. Whereas the cards just gave it that kind of expressivity that lets people play it very differently from each other.
So this is really the first card game like this that I've played. I was very aware of Slay the Spire when it was out. I watched a lot of people play it on stream, but I never really got into it. So like, this is the first time a lot of this is new for me, but I was totally hooked on it. Did you guys draw any inspiration from any of those card-based combat games like Slay the Spire or Hand of Fate?
I mean, Slay the Spire was definitely an influence. I mean, we kind of went and looked at their influences and like why things are doing the way they did. But we always, whenever you make a game, it you don't make it in a vacuum. You always look at what's out there and how other people solve similar problems. And think like, well, how would I do that a little bit differently? And how can we kind of extend what other people have done in order to make a unique and interesting game.
Yeah. And so this game, it's available right now. You can get the alpha on Epic, and then eventually it'll be on Steam. Do you guys have a release date yet? Is that later this year? Am I correct?
I think if you go on Steam, it says it's in June.
June.
I'm not sure the exact date of the month.
Yeah, that's right. No, I believe that's right. I looked it up, but then I didn't have it in my notes here. But yeah, so it's going to be available soon. And then what's the plan after that? Do you guys plan on DLC or new content?
Well, we always kind of, every game is different. We'll see what warrants it, right? Like if there's a big audience and we still have more ideas in the tank for more characters and that kind of thing, then probably. don't quote me on that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens, but I think it's going to be a hit. I've really, really enjoyed that. And I also wanted to ask you, just as we're wrapping up here, I always like to ask people such as yourself working in the gaming industry, do you play a lot of games yourself, or are you pretty busy these days just programming, designing, and working on games?
Yeah, I'm a grazer when I play games. Like, I never finish anything. I have a giant backlog of games where I've played a half hour to an hour to kind of say, oh, that's an interesting thing. So, you know, the backlog of guilt definitely weighs on all the consoles I own and Steam and whatever. When I play for fun, I tend to play turn-based strategy type things. Like the BattleTech game from a year ago was really good. XCOM, obviously.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, as much as I liked the first XCOM, the second one came out, and then I was just like immediately over it. And I think it was kind of my brain protecting me. The same thing happened with Grifflands. As soon as I beat the content that's available now, I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, I can put it down. And I'm a little scared to go back because it was just, I'm telling you, I had so much fun just designing the decks, going in again. I usually don't like roguelikes, and your game does have a roguelike element to it where, you know, you lose, you have to start over again. You go back in there, you learn a little bit each time and you do a little bit better, but I kept going back for more. But I'm excited for this release coming up. And, you know, I've been recommending this to everybody. And, you know, Clay Entertainment has just always been a mark of quality, I feel. You guys just make absolutely great games. So it's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you very much. That means a lot.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kevin.